Santa's watching, Santa's waiting. Christmas Eve is slowly fading. Can you hear him in the night? Close the door, turn out the light.
Christmas Eve is the scariest damn night of the year. You see Santa Claus tonight, you better run, boy. You better run for your life.
Do you have any idea what you're doing? You're being naughty right on Santa's lap. I don't bring toys to naughty children. I punish them severely.
Yeah. There is no Santa Claus.
Naughty.
7 o'clock. It's over. Time to get shit-faced.
Naughty. Punishment is necessary, Pamela. It is good.
Punish.
Punish!
Hey, well, you are listening to Hysteria Continues, and this is Armand Mastriani, the director of He Knows You're Alone.
And indeed you are, and welcome back to the festive. Is it the third festive or fourth festive?
Fourth.
Fourth, blimey. Okay, fourth festive, that's a tongue twister. Episode of Hysteria Continues, and this time we are back off to Utah for a little bit of Santa's Big Chopper with Silent Night, Deadly Night. And Eric, that little sound clip about, hey, it's time to get shit-faced, reminds me of you for some reason. Why would that be?
Well, normally I would say, you-haw! But in this instance, it's very true because we had our staff Christmas party on Thursday and I don't feel good.
No. But you, yes, well, that's a hangover, Eric.
Well, it was a hangover.
Was going to ask, you didn't sit on the copy machine and make copies?
No, but we were discussing it and we were getting perilously close to doing it.
Okay.
We were dancing on the tables, and when I came in on Friday morning, the Christmas tree was broken in half and there was a children's bicycle hanging from it.
Right.
Well.
So it was quite, yeah.
So it's one of those Christmas parties.
Nobody was feeling well on Friday.
No. Okay, well, fair enough. Was all the presenters there as well? Were they all shit-faced?
Yeah, but it was just all us youngsters, okay. Like me.
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
What? No, it's a sympathetic laugh. But it's good to have you back, Eric, after last week,
yes.
When we only had you here.
Well, I was working last Sunday, which fortunately meant I could go home early on Friday with my horrible hangover.
Okay. Well, that is good. So, and Nathan, how are you doing?
I'm okay.
Yes, good.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's early.
Yes, well, it's always early, isn't it, unfortunately. That's the way the way we roll. But, Joseph, are you any more perky? Have you had your morning coffee?
No, I've not had my morning coffee, but I do have a Christmas jingle for everyone.
Okay.
Jingle bells, Inga smells, Justin doesn't eat eggs. Nathan picks a shitty film and Joseph is not gay. Hey.
Well, that's very good.
Yeah. The rhyming left it a bit to be desired.
Well, it's a little early, so sorry.
So you're not happy, Joseph?
No, I'm terribly in a bad mood.
Okay.
Oh, well, we'll see if we can cheer you up.
We're recording the worst episode ever. I can just feel it.
Can you?
Merry Christmas, motherfucker. Sorry. No, actually, Merry Christmas to all and to all a good night. I love you all.
Oh, well, there you go. Thank you. And maybe we'll get around to All a Good Night next time. Now it's out on the spanking new Blu-ray, which I picked up as well. But I haven't watched it yet, Eric. But he's got it downstairs, cellophaned, covered in cellophane or whatever. But I've got it downstairs. Yeah. So I'm going to check that out later for some more Christmas viewing. I'm doing okay, actually. I just went to Christmas Do last night, but I don't feel too bad this morning. Unlike you lightweights, Eric.
Yes.
But yeah, no, well, we're doing this Christmas episode, and I think this is going to be out a week before Christmas as our special treat to you, our dear listeners.
That's because you're going to Turkey.
I am.
To visit me in prison.
Yes. Well, Istanbul first, not Constantinople.
You go to Turkey a lot.
I don't. I've only been once before.
Kind of strange for a vegan.
It's just kind of odd because I could have swore that you've been there a lot.
And Eric's been there a lot. Eric's.
I've never been to Turkey.
Have you not?
Yes, you have.
No, I've been to Cyprus.
Okay.
Which is close.
I've been to Turkey.
Justin, are you not scared going to, like, you know, some of these other countries? Have you not seen Broke Down Palace? They'll throw you in, like, a prison and you'll be trapped there. And you'll have to do the podcast from prison.
Well, or worse, because I was going to buy Stuart an orange jumpsuit for a joke present. But I think we're quite far away from the Syrian border, so we should be okay.
Okay.
Mm, Syria. Yeah.
Yes. But if you don't hear from me again, or I turn up on TV and 2 years' time in an unfortunate position, then you know what I mean.
just to ease everyone's fears, if Justin gets arrested, I'll put on my Justin accent and do the show as him and me.
See, a fate worse.
You know how good my accent.
I don't know if you can do his accent, not like I can.
Well, remember when I tried to do the Spanish accent? It turned out just like Justin's.
Yeah, that's a very curious.
So if I do my Spanish accent, I'll be Justin. So
or your Irish accent, and then you can be Australian if we had an Australian member.
Yeah.
I was like, I was listening last week, and I was like, oh, my God.
So did you like your interview, Eric?
No.
Why not?
But I have got my own new talk show that has been commissioned this week, if you want to play it there.
Shall I? Oh, okay. Well, here we go.
Okay, on today's program, we are interviewing Justin Kurzweil. Good afternoon, Justin. And tell us, first of all, how old are you exactly?
91.
Ooh, that's very old indeed. And tell me, how would you describe Susie?
Very strange cunt.
And finally, just one last question. Is it true that you are a doo-doo head?
Well, yes, it is.
Well, thank you for joining us today, Justin. And that's all from this week's show. Tune in next week when I'll be interviewing Nathan.
Aware.
What did I do?
Hey, at least I didn't even get mentioned.
No.
Well, you'll be on the show after Joseph, after Nathan.
Are you going to do
one? I picked an amazing film for you to watch, Eric, and then that's the thanks I get.
I think that might have something to do with it.
Is this your upcoming pick in a few weeks' time?
Oh, God, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Just put it this way, it's not going to be a happy new year.
No.
I'll be sick that week.
Yeah, I think we all will.
No, I'll be sick that week.
You're all going to be happy, to get sick.
Peppy, and excited.
Well, what are your New Year's resolutions? Have you got any? Eric, when's Anal Paprika 42 coming out?
Just to clarify, I'm not in the new Anal Paprika movie.
That's not IMDb says.
I haven't been in them since part 6.
Yes.
Okay.
But I saw your credit on IMDb for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
Mm-hmm. We'll go and check now.
Are you serious?
Oh, no. Who did it?
Did somebody do this? Seriously? I'm going to have to
check. Oh, my God. I got to go look.
Yeah, me too.
Did you do this, Justin?
Sorry? Oh, no, it wasn't me. It must be one of our listeners.
No, it's not there.
No, it's not there. It's a little joke. But then again.
Got a fright. Although the nickname Inga is still there.
Yes, well, that's good. So anyway, okay, well, let's move on because we've got a lot to pack in, haven't we, Eric? Mm-hmm. So, recently seen, who wants to go first? Nathan, how about you?
Well, unfortunately, you know, it's only been a week, so I really haven't watched much. Actually, I don't think I've watched anything horror-related. Surprisingly enough.
Well, that's okay. Nothing to be ashamed of.
I'm going to watch something close to horror related today, and it's A Very Brady Christmas, the one that came on in 1988.
Okay.
That's going to be horror enough.
Is that? That's not with... No. So that's with the original
cast. Predates the movies.
That's with the originals, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. So how about you, Joseph?
Well, the only thing I've seen is the independent slasher film, The Woods Within.
Oh, it's crap. I did watch it. Sorry.
It's from the Studio 605 guys who did The Campground and the Friday the 13th fan film, The Curse of Jason. And I'm not really going to try to sugarcoat this. It's pretty bad, but there's something about it that's very endearing. The characters are extremely obnoxious, almost to the point of parody. And it actually does have a lot going for it. I mean, I really like once it gets into the action in the woods. Considering the film's only an hour, it's pretty fun when it gets to that. When everyone starts dying and stuff, and it actually has a really clever ending. But I don't know. I just found I found their previous efforts a little more trying. I thought this one was kind of haphazardly put together. I mean, it's not to say it's a terrible film. I mean, it really looks great. It's got some good cinematography, and they really did put a lot of effort into it, you can tell. But I don't know. I think I preferred The Campground a little more.
I haven't seen either of those, but Nathan, you did watch it. But
I did, yeah. And I watched it earlier. It's early. I'd forgotten. But yes, there's... it's hysterical. I mean, I love it because it's so entertaining. One of the scenes in particular that I really liked is these two girls are setting up a tent, and one of them just makes some casual comment. This is totally Justin and Eric in this scene. Okay. One of them makes a casual comment about the other one's drinking and to kind of tone it down tonight. And the other one who drinks a lot gets offended and is like, "Oh, I hate you. Nobody likes you. She starts saying stuff to her like, "You are disgusting. You are repulsive. Like everybody hates you." And then the girl who's getting bullied just kind of turns around and leaves about to cry. And the other girl's like, "Hey, where are you going?" It's like, "Oh, I don't understand why you're leaving, even though I just called you all these horrible names."
Were they called Justine and Erica?
No.
Yeah. Did one of them go, "You whore"?
Yeah, actually, they probably did.
I think they did, because they called that girl a slut and stuff like that throughout the film.
You whore!
There's one scene I really like is when they actually discover they're being stalked by a killer. One of the guys and one of the girls is like trying to get to safety. And knowing that a killer is just right around the corner, he just starts hitting on the girl.
Right.
Like trying to pick her up, to have sex with her.
Well, fair enough.
And then the girl whose little brother, like her boyfriend bullies the little brother constantly. I mean, like really mean bullying. And later, when they're being stalked, he's basically confronting the guy about bullying him. And the guy's like, "It was your sister's idea. It's tough love." Yeah, thanks.
Well, it sounds,
she thought
it
would shape him up.
Yeah. It sounds like it's got some stuff in there to recommend it. So
it's very entertaining.
It really does. Yeah,
it's only an hour long.
It's hysterical, and I mean, I love movies like that.
Yeah,
cool. Okay, excellent. And Joseph, anything else?
No. It's only been a week, so it's been a very slim pickings week.
Okay, so Eric, have
I have been working on my Australian accent.
Okay, well, let's hear a bit of it then.
Good day, blimey.
Well, that's not bad.
Yeah. Isn't that wonderful?
Good day, blimey.
Yes.
Yeah. Blimey's more of a British term.
Yeah, British. But you're getting there, Joseph.
Work with me here, please.
So, Eric, have you seen anything outside the insides of a toilet bowl this week?
I wasn't actually sick, believe it or not.
Okay.
Unlike some of my colleagues at work who were vomiting nonstop on Friday.
Right.
I won't name names. Yes, I went to see this new theatrical release called The Pyramid earlier in the week.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's come out in the States as well, has it?
Yes.
The same week. Yeah, it's a very sort of by-the-numbers monster movie, and it tries to capture the same type of vibe and magic as The Descent, but it doesn't really succeed, I'm afraid to say. It's about three archaeologists who are being followed by two documentary filmmakers, and they go inside this pyramid that they found buried in the sand outside Cairo. They get trapped inside and discover there's something evil lurking in, and it turns out to be this sort of god-awful CGI monster, which really is ridiculously laughable when it does make its appearance in the final sort of 20 minutes. It's very much what we call now cattle prod cinema, where the soundtrack will will drop to almost complete silence, and then something loud and will happen very suddenly, and that's all there is to the film. That seems to be its sole ambition. As script-wise, it's very half-hearted, and it feels unfinished, in fact, because there's a couple of plot points in it that you think are going to lead to something dramatic but never go anywhere. Like, for instance, the air within the pyramid makes people break out in this horrible rash and boils and things, and it sort of indicates that it's going to turn them into nasty zombies or something, but nothing ever happens with that plot. They also seem to be constantly going around in circles, like in the Blair Witch Project. They keep coming back to the same point, and you think there must be some supernatural force going on, but again, nothing is made of that. So instead, it's just a color-by-numbers monster movie. It has one or two effective moments, but definitely it's not one to rush out and see. And I can see why it's sort of, I suppose it has flopped, because it's only, I think, was number 9 in the box office chart, which is quite low.
Imagine. I've never heard of it.
Do you think we would like it, like horror fans in general would at least enjoy it?
I'd say you could tolerate it, yeah, but I'd say it's definitely one I wouldn't rush out to the cinema to see it. If you see it on Netflix, maybe watch it. It's got a professional sheen to it and that, but it's just so, it's bland is probably the best way to describe it.
Mm.
It has a good premise as well. I mean, I love The Descent. It's one of my favorite films of the last decade. But this, it doesn't capture any of the claustrophobia or the scares of that.
Okay.
But I did go see 2001 A Space Odyssey on the big screen as well, which I know is not a horror film, and I know that it's something that Nathan would run screaming from if anyone ever came near him with a copy of 2001. But I still think it's one of the eeriest films ever, and it's amazing. I finally get to see it on the big screen, and it was amazing. The soundtrack is awesome.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt there. No. I was just curious, is that the one with like the big baby at the end or something?
Yeah, it is the one with the big baby at the end. Yeah, Justin.
Because I kind of remember that, but I didn't understand it.
No, I don't understand it either, really, but it's a... it's a great sort of sensory experience, those final 20 minutes. I have no clue what's going on.
I think it's a fantastic...
I thought I was alone in that, so I'm glad I'm not.
I think 2001 is fantastic, Eric.
Oh, that's good. That's something. Yeah. Would you agree with me that it's kind of an eerie film?
Yes.
It's almost like a horror film. Yeah.
It is. It's very kind of... It's kind of in a world of its own.
Mm.
And Justin, not to interrupt...
I haven't seen it for a long time, so I can't... I know it's a classic... But
classic.
Exactly. Yeah, but I haven't seen it for a while. So sorry, Joseph, you were saying.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, not to interrupt Eric's recently seen, but I forgot about this. I promised I'd do this. The Woods Within.
I finished my recently seen there. So.
Okay. The Woods Within guys and the campground and all that stuff. If you want to check out their films, they're actually, you know, they actually have a lot of talent. They really do put a lot of heart into these films. Check out Studio 605 on Facebook. Just type in Studio 605.
Cool. You're guaranteed to be entertained, people, so...
Oh, yes.
Definitely watch them.
There's never a dull moment in these movies.
No, not at all.
Excellent. Well, that's what you want, isn't it? So that's good. It's like you've all echoed, it's only been a week. So the only film of horror note I've seen this week is we're kind of still working our way through the British 70s horror movies. And this week we watched The Shout from 1978, which is quite
Is that a sequel to the Everybody Wants to Rule the World?
No.
See what I did there?
Yeah.
Isn't that...
Ba-doom.
I thought that was the John Travolta film.
What? The Shout? Or Everyone Wants to Rule the World? No, this is all going very
pear-shaped. There's a John Travolta film called Shout.
Oh, is there? No, this has got Susanna York, Tim Curry, John Hurt, and Alan Bates in it. And it's basically a very strange, kind of slightly... It's kind of feels like it's kind of film that was made by somebody who survived a kind of drug excesses of the 1960s, and then got a movie camera in the late 70s. And it's quite a basic story, but it's kind of a drifter, kind of ends up in the house of John Hurt and Susanna York. He kind of invites himself in, but he says he's got this. He spent time in the outback in Australia, and he learnt the shout, which basically
they didn't blimey.
It's, well, that kind of thing. But the shout, if he screams, anyone or any living thing within a hearing distance drops dead. It's a bit like a Toya concert, obviously.
I hate you.
But it's a very strange film because it's one of those almost like the Amicus anthology, except it's just one story, but it's bookended by a scene at an asylum with Tim Curry as a new doctor. You're not quite sure who's the doctor and who's the patient. And then it goes in. So it's got these quite famous people in it, but it's very strange. It doesn't really make much sense. And Susanna York constantly has her boobs out all the way through, rolling around and in the baths. And it's just, it's kind of one of those kind of, you wouldn't get a film like that today in British cinema. It's very 70s, very, very 70s, but not particularly thrilling, but looks interesting. So have you seen that, Eric?
I haven't, no, but I think Tim Curry is hot.
Do you?
Really?
What,
it
now?
Was a joke. Joke. Tim Curry. Oh. Hot. Oh. Curry.
Oh, Eric.
Okay. Well, you didn't prepare us for that.
Is that your joke of the week?
No, but it's even better than my joke of the week now that I think of it. That's harsh.
What do you mean it's harsh? It's I think it's very fair, Eric. But
I thought that joke was brilliant. That was top grade A material. I should have my own sitcom.
If you really wanted to be funny, if you were going to reference Curry, you should have made like a fart joke.
No, I'm too sophisticated for that.
Because, you know, Curry gives you diarrhea.
See? We've lowered the tone. It's supposed to be a Christmas edition with love and peace.
Goodness sake. Come on, let's... I think what we need is a bit more festivities or festive goodwill. So, and what better way to get festive goodwill than one of Joseph's quiz is? right. Joseph, do you want to take it away?
Yes, this is our festive holiday quiz. And I'm hoping Inga will make an appearance. We'll see. But there's five rounds. The first round, you'll start off, you'll have 30 seconds to answer your question. And each subsequent round, you'll lose 5 seconds. So... And round one is the last murder methods in a holiday. I use quotes around holiday because it's not just Christmas. It's like Halloween, any kind of holiday or, you know, birthday or anything like that. So these are the last. What?
I just want to clarify something. When you say the last murder methods, do you even include the killers in that?
No.
Okay. So last murder that's not the killer?
Well, it may be. It may be.
So oh, okay. All right.
Can we say multiple things in 30 seconds until we get it right?
No.
That's the way you usually do it, Justin. Yeah, what you want.
You get one answer, and then you have to pass it on.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm going to give you one answer.
So we're going to go alphabetical. So Eric, with an E.
Yeah, I don't really understand the question.
Here we go.
Basically, basically,
it's the last murder in a film. You have to say what was the okay,
how they died. Yes.
Okay.
Yay.
Eric, door number 1, 2, or 3?
3.
Okay. What is the last murder method in Halloween 2?
And this is not including Michael Myers, no?
No.
It would be, well, Donald Pleasance is stabbed and then blown up. He's stabbed by Michael Myers with a syringe. And then he blows. Although he doesn't die, sorry, he's back in Halloween 4. So, let me think. Who dies before that? Would it be the nurse who gets the scalpel stuck in her back and she's lifted off the ground and her clogs fall off?
That is incorrect.
No, it's not. It's right. That is right. That is the last one.
It's not.
No, it's not.
We're going to pass this to Justin, who now has 30 seconds to answer this.
It's the policeman who Michael Myers cuts his throat when he goes back to check he's dead.
What does he cut his throat with?
A scalpel, I think.
That is correct.
Well, no, he doesn't. Not in the TV version, he doesn't.
Oh, Eric. Come on. have a little bit of dignity for once.
Cunt.
Pardon?
Nothing.
Did you hear that? Did everyone hear that?
Yes, I did.
I heard it.
Oh, you've not got the Christmas spirit, Eric. Come on,
I haven't.
Peace and goodwill. And Eric, you should have known
that.
You come on.
This is all fixed because you were able to answer that straight away. Just
well, that's
so
because I've seen
it.
Halloween 2 about 100 times, and so have you, Eric. You should have known that.
Yeah, I know, but I'm...
Why did you know that? Why?
Because I wasn't part of this little... You've got a little Facebook group that I'm not privy to, and you've been given all the answers. I know that's what's happening.
Eric, that's not going to wash with our listeners, because they all would have answered that.
Well, we'll just see how this progresses then.
Okay.
And she's back. Inga is back.
Mm-hmm. With a vengeance.
Okay, Justin.
Okay.
Door number one or door number two?
Number two, please.
Okay. What is the last murder method in the day after Halloween?
The day after Halloween. So that's the Australian slasher, isn't it? Is it somebody gets set on fire?
No, that is incorrect. I'm going to pass this to Nathan, who has 30 seconds.
Someone gets stabbed to death.
No, that is incorrect. Eric.
Does somebody get drowned in fluid used for developing photographs?
That is incorrect. No. The correct answer is someone is run over with an ice cream truck.
Oh.
Oh.
All right, that leaves Nathan with door number one. You'll have 30 seconds to answer this. What is the last murder method in John Carpenter's Halloween?
Ah, for fuck's sake.
I'm sorry, Eric. Okay, I apologize. But I'm going to say that the last murder in that is strangulation.
With?
With a telephone cord.
That is correct.
That was so easy.
Well, you could have picked that one, Eric.
No, I couldn't because it's rigged. That's why.
Eric, Halloween 2 was easy.
It was very easy. You would have got that, Nathan, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it. Because I remember it happens right before the chase scene, and nobody dies after that chase scene.
Well, why don't you all get this?
Going into round two, Justin and Nathan are tied, and Eric is in dead last.
Mm-hmm. Only by 1 point.
With nothing.
Yeah, we use
nothing is worse than absolute zero, Eric.
That was a stupid concept for a question anyway.
All right, round two. These are quotes from holiday slasher films. And we're going to start with Justin.
Okay.
So door number one, two, or three?
I will go for number two again, please.
Okay, 25 seconds starts after I read the question.
Mm-hmm.
It's a quote, I'm sorry. We're really off to an interesting start, aren't we? Crazy trips must be a full moon.
Crazy trips? What was that? Crazy what?
Crazy trips must be a full moon. Ten seconds.
What left? I don't know, so I'm going to take a punt at To All a Good Night.
That is incorrect. Nathan, 25 seconds starting now.
Okay. The Dorm That Dripped Blood.
No, that is incorrect. Eric.
Okay, it sounds like something Blaze might say. So is it New Year's Evil?
That is correct.
Yes!
And I don't like you getting points because you're happy, and I hate that.
Ha. Well, deal with it, because I'm the super duper quiz master dude thing.
Nathan.
Uh-huh.
Door number one or door number three?
One.
Okay, 25 seconds after I read the quote. Throws rocks at dogs, picks his nose, poor body hygiene.
Oh, that's a quote. Okay.
It's Justin.
I was gonna say, it was you, Eric. I wouldn't throw rocks at dogs.
I don't. Home Sweet Home.
That is incorrect. Eric, 25 seconds starting now.
Is it Christmas Evil?
That is correct.
Ew.
Woohoo!
And I don't
Who's
like
winning now?
I don't like how this is progressing.
At the moment.
All right, so Eric, you're left with door number three.
Okay.
25 seconds after I read the quote. God put him here to give us pleasure.
God put us pleasure. Okay, I Black Christmas.
That is incorrect.
No.
Justin.
God's put him here to give us pleasure.
It's not about me, obviously.
No. I don't know. I'll go for To All a Good Night.
That is correct.
Is it?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
All right. So you and Eric are tied with two.
And Eric, watched that film recently.
Shut up, you slag.
Okay.
All right, so who went first this round? It was Justin, and then we went to Nathan. So I don't know whose turn it is. Nathan. Okay, Nathan, you have door number three. 25 seconds.
Are you sure it's my turn? I thought I had the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Justin's turn. Sorry. Yeah.
Okay, Justin. Hmm. 25 seconds after I read the quote.
I've already had a 25-second one, though.
But you were answering Eric's.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So whose turn is it?
It's Justin's.
God, we need a glamorous assistant.
Yes, we do.
We need what's her name from Graduation Day?
We do, Vanna White.
Vanna White, that's it.
Okay, so whose turn is it really?
Justin's!
Okay.
I think it's mine,
okay.
But I think it's a 20-second one, isn't it? Because I've already done the 25-second one, the quote.
Yeah, but that's because I passed on it.
And wait, so Justin did that.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The New Year's Eve.
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Oh, so the round two's done.
Yeah, round two's done.
Sorry.
Yeah, Eric.
I got a little.
God.
Okay. Then I guess it is my turn.
Right. We're going into round three now.
No.
Eric has two, Justin has two, and Nathan has one. Okay, round three is names. Basically, I'm going to ask you what the person's name, the character's name is in these movies.
Okay.
And you have 20 seconds after I read the question. So, Nathan, door number one, two, or three?
Two.
Okay. What is TJ's full name in My Bloody Valentine?
Tom Haniger?
That is incorrect.
Yeah.
Eric?
TJ Hooker.
That is incorrect. Justin?
Well, I would have thought it's Tom Haniger as well, but maybe it's one of his middle name, so maybe it's Tom Jeremiah Haniger.
You're all incorrect, and I'm very, very, very disappointed in you all. Oh. It's Jesse Haniger.
Okay.
What?
Well, they don't call him that, okay?
Yes,
they don't
she
call
does.
Him that in that movie.
On the bluff, she says, "What was I supposed to think, Jesse?"
Oh, but see, Tom is that counts. That counts.
No, it doesn't.
Jesse does not count.
It's my go.
All right, Eric, door number one or three?
One.
Okay. What is Jake Steinfeld's name in Home Sweet Home?
Mistake?
That is incorrect. Justin.
He's the only character I know in Home Sweet Home.
He's a killer, isn't he? But, I don't know, actually. I'll just say the body.
The body by Jake.
Yeah.
Nathan.
Oh, God. I'm going to say he is the killer.
That's correct.
Is what? It? No.
It's yes. Not his name.
It's that is. It's just it's killer. That's what it's according to the killers.
God. What a name.
They put a lot of thought into that one, didn't they?
Yeah.
All right, so Nathan went first, Eric went second.
In defense of Justin, he did say, oh, he's the killer, isn't he?
Yeah.
His answer.
But he didn't say that. He was making a statement. He wasn't saying an answer.
Well, I'm impressed that Eric's defending Justin.
I know.
It's
impressive. Yeah. Thank you, Eric. We can be. We could see, after all this time, we could be friends.
We could.
Yeah.
So, you want to know something else that's impressive?
What's that?
My cock.
No.
No. You're all tied with two.
Gosh. Ooh. Everything to play for.
It's anyone's game.
The plot thickens.
Okay. Justin, you were left with door number three.
Yep.
And what is David Carradine's name in Trick or Treats?
Well, David Carradine plays the father, doesn't he? I no idea at all. The father?
That's incorrect. Nathan, do you know?
Mr. Mentalbaum.
No, that is also incorrect. Eric.
Daddy?
That is correct.
Is this?
No, it's it's Richard Adams.
I've never seen how on earth are we supposed to remember that?
I was so excited.
How on earth are we supposed to remember that, Joseph?
Yeah, I've never even seen Trick or Treats. How am I supposed to know that?
What? You haven't seen Trick or Treats? Oh, okay. I might remember that.
Oh, God. Look what you started now, Eric.
I know.
I moved to
what
fire.
What year is it from?
82.
82.
Yeah. I moved to fire Eric from the podcast for starting.
Okay, well, let's carry on. So we're still on.
Well, who's going to do this if I'm gone?
I'll do it. Listen.
Answer me that.
Mine's not as impressive, sorry.
No. Yours is very flappy. Oh, yeah. Mine's more squidgy.
Well, okay, round four is connections. You have to tell me how two slasher films, one that is how are these two slasher films connected?
Oh,
either
God.
either one is a holiday, or either both is a holiday slasher film. So,
okay.
Nathan went first last time. So, Eric, door number one, two, or three?
I want a big number two this time.
Okay. You have 15 seconds after I read the question. April Fool's Day is connected to Waxwork. How?
Oh.
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, your time is up and you don't know, so I'm going to pass that to Justin.
Is it Russell Todd?
No, that is incorrect. Oh. Nathan.
Is it Deborah Foreman?
That is correct.
Mm. I love Waxwork. Do you guys like that movie? Mm.
I haven't seen
it. No, it's a good film. I was getting confused then. I don't know why I thought Russell Todd. But anyway.
Okay. Mm. Justin, door number one or door number three?
Number one, please.
Okay. Don't Open Till Christmas is connected to Pieces. How?
Because they were both, it's connected in a number of ways, because they were both produced by Dick Randall, and also the guy whose name I can't remember, he was in both of them, the guy who played the principal and the detective.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Edmund Purnham.
That's the one.
Yeah. That's correct.
Thank you.
Justin and Nathan are tied with three. Eric has two.
Come on, Eric. We're all counting on you.
Oh, shut up.
All right, Nathan.
Yeah.
You have door number three.
Okay.
And you have 15 seconds after I read the question. Graduation Day is connected to Halloween 4. How?
Oh, I don't think I know. I'm going to say Donald Pleasance. He played the music teacher in Graduation Day.
That's incorrect. Halloween. Eric.
God, Halloween 4 and Graduation Day. Michael Pataki, the actor, is in both.
That is correct.
Yes.
I knew that.
Who is he?
He was the principal.
The principal in Graduation Day, and he's is it the head of the
police chief
hospital?
Isn't he?
Oh, it's police
chief. Dr. Hoffman in Halloween 4.
Mm. I'm impressed you remembered that, Eric, since you have a seething hate for Halloween 4.
Yes, but I've seen it enough times.
See, I haven't. I can't watch it that much.
Yeah, he's probably on Google.
What?
Joseph.
Take that back. There isn't enough time to be feckin' Googling.
That's actually true. I don't think you'd give enough time. 15 seconds, you could figure out the connection.
This is the last round.
Wow, okay.
Oh, and you only
get 10 seconds.
Right.
Oh, Lord.
And these are AKAs. So alternate titles.
Okay.
And let's see, who went first last time?
I think it's Justin's turn to go first.
So it's Nathan's turn. Or is it Justin's turn?
No, I think it's Justin's turn to go first.
Okay, Justin, door number 1, 2, or 3?
Number 2, please.
And you have 10 seconds. Blood Wedding is an alternate title to what, quote-unquote, holiday slasher film from 1980?
He Knows You're Alone.
That is correct.
What holiday is that?
It's a wedding. Yeah. I said quote-unquote.
A wedding isn't a holiday.
Well, I said quote-unquote.
Yeah, Eric. Get with the program.
Quote-unquote.
Yeah. Hey, I had to kind of struggle here, so.
Yeah, a wedding is not a holiday.
It sure is.
Thank you, Eric.
Yeah, if somebody in the office gets married, I don't get the day off work.
Yeah, well, I mean, it'd be nice, but I don't.
Nathan went on vacation when he got married, so.
Yeah, but that was not a holiday.
Yeah, it was.
In America, those aren't called holidays.
All right, moving on. Nathan.
In He Knows You're Alone, her boyfriend goes away on holiday, doesn't he? On vacation with his friends.
It's vacation, though.
That's a holiday.
Yeah, but this is a different kind of holiday quiz.
Yeah.
Well, who makes the rules?
Well, obviously, doesn't matter what the rules are as long as Justin wins.
Oh, come on, Eric.
You just throw the rules out the window, right, Eric?
Yep, that's it.
Well, let's see. Let's see what happens when we have your meltdown.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Door number 1 or door number 3?
I'll take 3 this time.
Okay. Bloody Midnight is an alternate title to what, quote unquote, holiday slasher from 1980?
Quote unquote. Bloody Midnight? I'm going to say Midnight.
That is incorrect. Eric.
Friday the 13th?
That is incorrect. Justin.
Is it New Year's Evil?
That is also incorrect. Mm. The correct answer is Prom Night.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, I've never heard of that one before. Well, not Prom Night, but the AKA.
Mm-mm. Bloody Midnight. Okay, so the
Bloody
Eric.
Midnight.
You were left with door number 1?
Yes.
You have 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Creeps, Creepers, and Angst are alternate titles to what quote-unquote holiday slasher film from 1981?
Creep, Creepers, holiday-themed one from 1981.
Two, one.
Halloween 2.
Nope, time's up. You didn't get it. Justin.
Bloody Birthday?
That is correct.
Bloody Birthday is 1980.
Not according to Justin's site.
Mm-hmm.
Justin's site is incorrect. Let me have a look at IMDb and see what it says about Bloody Birthday. Because.
Let me ask Lori.
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really matter the year because I gave the alternate titles to the film, so.
Exactly. And I knew them and you didn't, Eric. So what's the scores on the doors, Joseph?
Well, Eric and Nathan tied with 3, but Justin wins the quiz with 5.
Yes.
Well, see, the thing is, you've sourced all your information from hysterialives.co.uk, which Justin has written.
Not all of it.
That's true.
Only some of it.
But
I think it's also all of it from it.
I think
Are you trying to say that Justin, who's written a book on slasher films, knows nothing about slasher films?
Yeah, Eric.
No, I'm just saying you should quiz him on, like, you should. Yeah, you might as well just be quizzing him on Susie and the Banshees.
What's that got to do with anything?
Justin.
Yes.
In 1983, Susie and the Banshees released what number 1 single?
Dear Prudence. Although it didn't get to number 1, it got to number 3.
I don't know.
Dear Prudence.
Ask Eric what top 3 hits Toya had.
Toya. She had I Want to Be Free.
Was that top three?
It's a mystery. I'm not sure. They were top 10 anyway.
Okay. Just checking.
Is top 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, there should be an asterisk next to Justin's win because I debate the holiday in some of these.
Yeah, but yes. I did win by 2 points. Let's
I said at the very beginning of the quiz that it was holidays and other themed.
And even though every site I've looked on says Bloody Birthday is 1981, I still think it's 1980.
Okay, well,
I say it was filmed in 80, so we got to go by that.
Yeah,
it might have been released in 81, but that's because it sat on the shelf for 10 years.
And also, every question is sourced from Justin's website, so obviously he'll know the answers.
Congratulations, Justin.
Thank you. I think that was one of the best quizzes we've ever had. So thank you for that. And I, you know, I'd like to say, you know, I'm winning with dignity, and I would hope the people I've defeated would lose with dignity as well. But obviously, that's too much to ask.
But if I've written
the last Christmas quiz.
Yeah. So there.
Okay. Well, thank you, Joseph. I think you did a very good job in light of all those kind of, you know, all that negativity and tantrums. So I think you did very well. Thank you. Shall we move on then to the feature of the week? And Zarek can have a calm down.
Bish.
You're going to calm down a bit?
I'm just so happy she's back.
Well, yes. It wouldn't be the same, would it, with Christmas without Inga?
Mm. What's weird is that Inga wasn't around last Christmas.
Was she not?
Because Eric won. Because Eric won the quiz, so he was happy.
That's true. That's true. Okay.
Eric, you have earned that honorific on the IMDb.
Yeah.
Yes. I truly have.
And Anal Paprika 42. I'm sure that'll make him.
No.
Just being vetted at the moment, but be up there soon.
I'm sorry, but if that really had been next to Eric's name, that would have been one of the most funniest things that's ever happened on this show.
No, it wouldn't. And I swear, if I. If any of you do that, I will kill you.
Well, there you go. That's kind of a plot for a slash movie, if ever I heard one.
I have to say, though, before we get into the main feature, I love the idea of having the timer because it really cut down on any, like, you know, I guess, dull points, so to speak.
Yes. Well, apart from Eric's bits, but yeah.
Hey!
I had, like, a graduation day stopwatch.
Well, perfect. So, okay, well, let's crack on with the main feature. And here we are. Here's the trailer for Silent Night, Deadly Night.
The night before Christmas, when all through the house, not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care, in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the streets, blood is glistening in this Yuletide tale of terror. After many years of abuse at the hands of tyrannical nuns, Billy's finally flipped. Dressed as St. Nick, the teenager heads back to the oppressive orphanage of his childhood to exact his bloody revenge, punishing anyone who gets in his way. Boycotted by legions of angry parents when it was released in America, this festive fright flick has courted controversy ever since. So Silent Night, Deadly Night, possibly the most controversial of all the Christmas slashers, certainly the one that caused the most problems for its distributor. It's also one that didn't get released in the UK until, I think, 2009. It was roundly attacked by critics, which we'll talk about a little bit more later. But when I watched it again this weekend, well, actually earlier today, I was struck actually by what a well put together movie it is, and also one obviously with its tongue firmly planted in its cheek, which is something which clearly bypassed many of the people who were boycotting it. It's a fun film. It's got everything you could want from an early 80s slasher. Creative kills. I mean, it's not scary in the least bit, but it's kind of misanthropic in a kind of jolly kind of way, I kind of guess. It's pretty well acted. Say it's got the gore, it's got boobs, if those are your thing. It's killer Santa. It's got children screaming after seeing a priest dressed as Santa being gunned down in front of them, in front of an orphanage. So it's no wonder that John Waters, I think it said it's one of his favourite, well, I think it was Christmas Eve, or he said it was one of his favourite festive movies, but I imagine he sits down to this every single year. So yeah, I'm a bit of a fan of this movie, and I'm glad we picked it, but I'll be interested in hearing what Inga has to say.
Are you referring to me?
Well, I might be. Sorry, Eric.
Okay.
Sorry, Eric.
Yes. That's my name. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, quiz loser. I do. What?
What?
The quiz loser.
I came second. I was the runner-up.
You tied.
Well, so was I.
You were the tied loser.
Yeah, runner-up. I'm not a loser. I'm a runner-up.
You have to share the trophy, the bronze trophy with Nathan.
Silver.
I'll take the silver. Eric can have the bronze one.
No, yeah. I don't want the bronze.
You're going to have the bronze.
Feck off with your bronze. Silent Night, Deadly Night. Yes, I do like it, but it was not a film I liked when I saw it first. It's in fact, I hated it as much as I hate Justin.
Oh.
So there.
Well, not very much at all then. You secretly, secretly loved it.
I don't love you.
You do.
I think he secretly wants to have sex with it, is what it is.
Well, no, I don't have sex with Silent Night, Deadly Night. Hmm. Anyway. So the problem for me with Silent Night, Deadly Night, when I was watching it first, is it's one of those slasher movies that sort of follows the killer. It's from his point of view rather than the victim's. So it falls into that category of films like Maniac and Don't Go in the House and Christmas Evil, which is the type of slasher that I'm less inclined to like. I prefer the mysterious mass killers going around the woods chopping up teenagers. And this does take its time getting going. I mean, the slasher action doesn't start until maybe 45 minutes into the film. But it is very different from your run-of-the-mill slasher, and that's probably why it kind of stands out from the crowd a bit. I was talking earlier about 2001, and that's a film that takes place in three different time periods, which is exactly what happens in Silent Night, Deadly Night. We move from 1971 to 1974 to 1984. So you could say it's like a Stanley Kubrick slasher movie, if you wanted. You'd probably be slightly wrong, but you could say that. I am more forgiving of the film now, watching it again. I mean, as Justin said, this didn't get a release in the UK until 2009. I probably saw it maybe in the mid-90s for the first time. And as with a lot of slasher movies over the years, it has grown on me a lot more. I do enjoy it. I love the aged 8 Billy's mullet. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm not sure if it's authentically 1974, but it's very, very, very enjoyable to see, you know, the mullet in a slasher movie. As you know, I'm a big fan of 80s fashions. Justin mentioned it's not a very scary film, and it's not very suspenseful either. It's entertaining, but there's no real sequences of suspense. That's probably due to the aforementioned character study, quote, approach that the film takes. You know, it's kind of a static movie as well, and the momentum isn't exactly building, you know, a great head of steam to it. You know, as I said, the film is 45 minutes in before you get to sort of any kind of proper slasher action. It does have some inventive kill sequences, though. I mean, the infamous scene where Linnea Quigley is impaled on antlers is incredibly fun and quite gruesome, but also, you know, kind of a hokey effect. But there's some quirky touches in there, too. I love the peculiar grandfather who is catatonic when the adults are around, but then turns into this sort of Crazy Ralph character when as soon as the adults are out of the room and he's left alone with Billy. Nathan, you might have spotted one thing in the film that I really liked. You've this you know, this track record of spotting background characters in films that you kind of take a shine to. There's a choir singer in Silent Night, Deadly Night who's singing outside the house where Linnea Quigley is going to be having sex on the pool table, as you do, and she's really over-egging her lip sync performance. I don't know if you know
watch
the,
now
do you know the one I mean?
I don't, and now I gotta look and see. Yes. I love background characters.
Yes, she's absolutely fantastic. Every time I watch the film, I mean, she really, really stands out. Also, the idea of sex on the pool table is something that's little explored in cinematic history in general. I'm not sure how practical it is. I'd like to see... I'd like to see a pool table support my weight as well. That would be a test first. That would be a test for pool table manufacturers everywhere. The other thing that about the film is, for me, is it. Although it feels quite wintry, it doesn't feel Christmassy to me. I don't know what it is about it. Something like Black Christmas, the 1974 version, feels incredibly festive, whereas Silent Night, Deadly Night doesn't to me. I can't quite pinpoint where it goes wrong. I mean, it feels cold and wintry, but doesn't feel like Christmas. But having said that, I was entertained by the film. Can't really understand why there was huge fuss. Well, I can understand why there was huge fuss over this, because it was getting a sort of bigger release than films like Christmas Evil and To All a Good Night, which is why it was targeted. But it's too cheesy to take seriously, but good fun.
Cool.
The okay. end.
Yes, well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, what are your thoughts on Silent Night, Deadly Night?
Oh, I really love the film. I think... what I really do like about it is one of the things Eric touched upon was the grandfather character, who's basically in this kind of like catatonic state, and then as soon as his parents leave, it gets really sinister, and he tells the story of how Santa's going to punish the naughty, and I think that's a really good setup to what happens with Billy and Ricky out on the road with the Santa, and then going into the movie, him becoming, twisted and killing people. I also really love the cinematography in this film, and the cinematographer, Henning Schellerup, he has quite a pedigree. He was in his second unit on Nightmare on Elm Street. He did Halloween 4, Maniac Cop, even the crappy Rocktober Blood. He was involved with that. And I think some of the shots in this film are just, wicked, well done. I really like the character. I mean, she's such a good villain as the mother superior character, because she really embodies everything that I pretty much hate about religion. You have sex, you're going to be punished. Punishment is good. It's all under God's plan, et cetera, et cetera. I think one thing that really sets this film apart from a lot of the Christmas slasher films of that era is that you kind of feel sorry for Billy, and he has you can understand why he's doing this, and the characters that he goes after, they're not, I wouldn't say they're unlikable, but they're not really given much in the way of personality, so you kind of follow him, which I guess you would anyway, since it's from his point of view. You do kind of sympathize with him a little bit. I mean, certainly what happens to him is pretty out there. But I saw this. Actually, I saw this on the big screen last year with Nathan for the first time. Well, it wasn't my first time seeing it, but the first time seeing it on the big screen, it was actually, it was really nice seeing it on a big, in a movie theater. I do have a lot more to say about it, but I'll let Nathan talk for a while. But yeah, thumbs way up for me.
Okay, Nathan.
I find Silent Night, Deadly Night to be near perfection for a slasher movie. I mean,
you find everything to be near perfection. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, it's awesome. I mean, from beginning to end, to me, there's not one dull moment in this film. It's so entertaining. From the opening, and I will admit, one thing that I disliked about the opening is that killer was never caught. Apparently, I mean, we never hear about it. If he ended up getting caught or something, we don't know, but. I mean, I needed to see punishment for the guy that actually killed his family.
You've been naughty.
Mother Superior, I mean, do you guys really think she's a villain? I mean,
I do.
Didn't she doing what she thought was best for the kids? It's just her methods were not good.
It was funny, wasn't it? Because at the end, the last scene, she seems quite sympathetic, doesn't she? But I agree, she was doing what she thought was best. But she,
and I mean, at the end, like, she did try to protect the kids, I don't think she disliked the children or anything. To me, what makes Mother Superior, I guess, an interesting, villain of sorts is what she's doing is awful, but she's not doing it for the wrong reasons. Like, in her mind, I think she's actually really trying to help, but it's just she's not helping whatsoever.
Brainwashed.
No, I think she's a very complex character. I didn't say she's a good guy, because she's not. But, you know, I like the way they wrote her character. I think she's very complex.
Well, just the way she goes about her
wheelings
and dealings.
I'm just saying, like her mind, I think, is wanting to help, but everything she does is doing the opposite, you know, which I think is typical for not all Christians, but some that I have met. You know, they think they're doing a good thing, but, you know, in reality, it's not really. Mm-hmm. But no, I mean, the movie's great. You know, I mean, to me, and what's crazy to me is that I actually think I prefer the scenes of Billy as a kid, you know, at the beginning with his crazy grandpa, who that was weird too. You know, like the grandpa, what he suddenly, after never speaking to anyone, decided to speak to Billy. Mm. And that was just a very odd scene. It was actually kind of creepy.
Kind of makes you wonder if it's like all in Billy's head or what.
Yeah, exactly. But I love the scenes at the orphanage. I could probably watch the whole movie of the scenes at the orphanage. You know, that could have been a whole movie in and of itself, you know. But no, when we get to the killings, I mean, I love the slasher part of it. I mean, because one thing I like is, you know, in the toy store, it's kind of a mini slasher movie in there because, you know, like one by one, the employees get killed and then he hits the town and just starts slaughtering anybody. So I like the way they did that, you know, because even the last woman has this, like, the final girl, you know, kind of chase scene. But I mean, I love him giving the little girl the box cutter as a Christmas gift. You know, and I have to say, if any scene in the film I think would come close to being, I guess, kind of scary, it would probably be that scene with the little girl. Because, you know, I mean, he's asking her if she's been good or bad, and, you know, he's like opening the box cutter behind his back so you don't know what he's going to do. So, I mean, I really like that scene in the film, and I love the sledding scene, the decapitation on the sled. I thought that was really awesome.
I love the reaction of his friend. When his friend sees him in dead.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, so he's really good in that scene. And let's see, the ending, I really like the ending, and a lot of people got really upset because, you know, they really wanted to, you know, we're going to spoil it, obviously, spoilers, but they really wanted, you know, Mother Superior to die, you know, and she doesn't, not at the end of this one. But no, I mean, I actually kind of liked that they did it that way because I thought it was, you know, kind of, you know, cheesy and creepy, and you know, I just love the ending with his little brother pointing at her, you know, and saying naughty and the look on her face. I mean, I thought it was a great way to end the film. And of course, he does go after her in part two, but I mean, we may cover that sometime, so I'm not really going to talk about that. Garbage day. But no, I mean, it's an awesome, awesome movie. I can't say anything bad about it.
Well, we technically are already covering part two because about 2/3 of part two is part one.
That's true. Yes, we are talking about part two at the moment as well.
Yes. I do agree with you, Nathan, about the store sequence feeling like a mini movie in itself. It's very like Intruder. You got the, is it four? Is it, there's four employees he goes after sort of when he snaps. So it does have that kind of Intruder vibe I got anyway. And that bit's fun.
Did you think that the girl... I mean, it was just odd to me that, you know, that guy was about to rape her and Billy kind of saves her life. And then she starts screaming at Billy for being crazy. I'm like, I would think she'd have been at least, I mean, maybe scared, but at least thankful that he stopped this guy from raping her.
But wasn't she also, was it a dream sequence, wasn't it, when he was having sex with her?
Yeah.
So he kind of, it was kind of that he probably saw her as being bad because he dreamt about her, him having sex with her. Because when he saw the two people having sex when he was a kid, and the Mother Superior told him it was bad, it was naughty.
Right.
Well, it is bad, another thing.
I mean, do you guys find it odd that you have this guy and girl there, and they look like they're what? I don't know. What age do you think they were supposed to be, the two having sex in the... Well, the nuns
in the orphanage, yeah, they look like the 30-year-old orphans.
Yeah,
should they not have moved out?
Yeah.
In the movie, how old do you think they are?
I'm guessing they're supposed to be about 16.
Yeah,
maybe.
And does it not seem odd to you that a 16-year-old guy would just stand there and let this like 80-year-old nun like beat him with a belt?
Yeah,
I mean, they just kind of let her beat them with a belt. Both of them do, and I'm like, no, I don't think so.
Do you know what bit I found odd was when the store manager, what's his name? Mr. Sims! When he's introduced to Billy, aged 18, and he sort of eyes him up from his toes to his head, and he's like, whoa. Does Mr. Sims have a crush on Billy?
I think he might have.
Do Justin and Nathan have a crush on Billy?
I think he's impressed with his work ethic.
Yeah.
He's a hard worker. Hard.
I'm sorry, but Billy's one of the more attractive slasher villains.
Yeah. We'll put it this way.
He's a villain.
More attractive than Jason in Friday the 13th Part 7.
Oh, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah, I know, because he's dreamy in that.
We'll put it this way. If he emptied his sack around my way, I wouldn't mind. So...
Well, it'd be a lot because Santa only comes once a year. So.
Well, exactly, yes. I haven't actually got a festive... it's a shame there's no festive double entendres, but as it's Christmas...
you whore!
Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. what can we do?
Matron, no, please, hold your hand!
So... we've also got a clip, because we're probably going to... we can talk more about the movie, but we're also going to get into some background, because there's a lot of background on this movie, isn't there? A lot about the controversy. But I've got a TV report here. It's only a couple of minutes long from back in the day, talking about the controversy, which I thought would be quite fun to play. Shall I play that now?
Yes, please, Mummy.
Okay, here we go.
Last Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night. That's the one with Santa as the axe murderer. Well, it's coming back. Dick Shoemaker has that story in our news studio.
Rob, when Silent Night, Deadly Night was first released, many parents were shocked that a movie about a maniacal Santa Claus would be shown at Christmas time. Well, now it's the month of May, and the film's producer is trying again.
It'll play in every part of the country, including backward in some places where it began to play and was pulled.
Silent Night, Deadly Night, the movie that shocked America. Outraged Hollywood and frightened the government.
The new advertising campaign plays up the earlier controversy about the film, when angry parents picketed theaters where it played and the critics took offense.
And Silent Night, Deadly Night now has the distinction of joining I Spit on Your Grave as one of the two most contemptible films I've seen. And I don't mean to think it's campy. It really is quite awful.
But the producer claims critics had other motives for reviewing the film.
They were coming off an enormous amount of publicity on that picture, and I think that they knew that by reviewing that picture on their show, they would get higher ratings.
And Ira Richard Barmack produced it. You people have nothing to be proud of, even if you made a few bucks off of all the negative publicity. Your profits truly are blood money.
Shame on you, Siskel, and shame on you, Ebert, because I don't believe you. I think it was the height of hypocrisy for them to take that attitude. If they genuinely were horrified at the picture, they know very well that the most effective thing they could have done is to not review the picture.
And yes, we even see Santa give one little girl a bloody knife as a gift and threaten another little girl with physical punishment as he sits on his lap. You might think that it would be funny, Roger, or parody. It's played as quite sick in the film.
I find it so amazing that if you say a guy gets into a Santa Claus suit and he's driven over the line, that people don't on the face of it see why that's funny.
Silent Night, Deadly Night opens in 93 theaters tomorrow in North and South Carolina and in upstate New York, with plans for a wider release already in the works. Mary.
He was referring to you at the end there, Eric, I think.
Mary. I like how... I think Siskel and Ebert, they were very hypocritical back in the day, but they did tend to lighten up towards their later years. But if you go to YouTube, there is a huge compilation of them just reviewing slasher films. And, of course, the Silent Night, Deadly Night bit is in there. But yeah, they were very hypocritical on those films, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's
that guy makes a very good point.
Well, that was Ira Barmak or Barmak, but the producer of the film, and I thought it was quite an interesting, you know, piece, because he's basically calling them all out on the rank hypocrisy, and also the fact is, it's, you know, people at the time, it was you know, it was meant to be relatively tongue in cheek, a kind of black humour about it, which seemed to go completely over the heads of Siskel and Ebert, and it's interesting the way they twist. It was a kind of something they did in the UK with the Video Nasties thing, when they got clips of all the worst bits, all the kind of the gore effects from Video Nasties, and showed them to politicians to try and get them to ban them. And of course, it's taken out of context. And when you have Siskel and Ebert talking about Santa giving a little girl a bloody knife, although it's a box cutter, and threatening physical punishment to another child, you're not seeing it in the context of the film. And so they're doing that on purpose, and it's very misleading, which is so it's good to see the producer calling them out on that.
Yeah, there's definite context around this. I mean, they never show what the plot is about. They just say, oh, it's just a Santa killing people, and it's really more than that.
Yeah. Well, it is, especially.
To me, this movie is heavy in plot. I mean, yeah. You know.
I'd say it's a character study, more like, you know, kind of like Maniac, which is another you know, gruesome movie, but it has context to it.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't they going a little bit overboard with this is blood money? I mean, it's not like anybody's really dying over this.
No, yeah, really.
Like, come on.
Yeah. Although it's kind of ironic that, you know, it had so much controversy, but, you know, according to Wikipedia, and Justin might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, the budget was 750 grand, but it actually made, you know, almost 3 million. So I'd say, you know, I think that controversy actually worked in their favor.
It did. I mean, shall we get on to background and see what we come up with, and then sort of talk a little bit about that. So I'll start with Nathan. Have you got anything for us?
I actually do have one thing.
Okay.
And the scene with Linnea Quigley, you know, she was supposed to be in her underwear. And, you know, on the day of filming, she told the director, I don't wear underwear. So they had to go out and buy that for her.
Gosh.
I don't wear underwear either.
I like it. I'm like, you go, Linnea. Talk about being ahead of your time.
Yeah. She's just being a bit lippy on that day.
Justin, you are surprised.
What?
Because you always say lips, and it reminds me of camel lips from Cereal Mom.
Camel toe.
Camel toes.
Is it camel?
Well, they call it camel lips in the.
Okay. Yeah, it's L7, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's L7.
Yeah. So, okay, well, thank you. Thank you, Nathan. Joseph, how about you?
I don't really have anything, just the whole budget and the whole controversy thing. That's pretty much all I looked at, because this is another movie that's kind of like the Friday the 13th series. I think a lot of people know a lot about it because of the controversy, so I didn't really do much research, but I'm sure you have a lot more.
Yeah, so that's your excuse. Thank you, Joseph, for
that. Yes. it's a great one, too.
Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
Eric, how about you?
Yeah, well, I did do some research. You'd be glad to hear it, Justin.
I am glad to hear it.
What? Sorry?
I am glad to hear it.
Yes. It's based very loosely on an original idea called He Sees You When You're Sleeping by a then 21-year-old writer called Paul. It's a Caimi, C-A-I-M-I. It sounds like Raimi with a C. And the only element that they used was the killer Santa Claus, although he still gets a story credit, even though that's the only element they used from his script. The script was then developed into a title called Sleigh Ride, which was the film's shooting title. Now, the director, Charles Sellier, states on the Anchor Bay DVD that I have from years ago, I think it was about 2003 or so, that it was based on a novel called Sleigh Ride, but that apparently is not true. Filming took place in Utah, which is probably why it looks so wintry. In the first 10 days of release, it made about $2.5 million, as Joseph was saying, on a budget of less than $1 million. It was well on its way to making a ton of money, although it was pulled from release, as we all know, by TriStar after the controversy.
I'm sorry, Eric, you do know the production company is Sleigh Ride.
Yes. I know that, okay. Yeah, but the original shooting title was Sleigh Ride as well.
Yeah, I wonder if they'd name their production company after that.
Probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. It opened the same day as Nightmare on Elm Street, and it was outperforming it up until the time it was pulled from theaters, although it was getting, it had a wider release. It was TriStar Pictures, as I said, and this was their first year of releasing films. Later that month, they released Supergirl, the camp-tastic superhero favorite. Their first film came out earlier that year, and it was Where the Boys Are 84, which starred Russell Todd.
No, didn't say anything. I think
Skype thing. There's a couple of connections between Silent Night, Deadly Night and the Halloween series. For starters, Nancy Borgenicht, who plays Mrs. Randall, who goes around saying, "Mr. Sims," a lot. She's also in Halloween 4. She's one of the doctors at the beginning of the film. Leo Getter, who plays Tommy, who's Linnea Quigley's bit of Salami, who's getting down with her on the pool table. He was also in Halloween 6, which we covered recently. He played the shock jock in Halloween 6. And the Santa that you can see climbing through the window, who is mistaken for the killer, that is Don Shanks, who played the shape in Halloween 5.
They were all shot around Utah as well, weren't they?
They were, yeah. So that's probably where the connection comes from, yeah. Mm. They're probably all local actors. Mm. As I said, the film was pulled after a couple of weeks. Sorry, I said pulled.
Eric.
Producer Ira Barmack bought back the rights, and Aquarius Films then gave it another release in 1985, and then it went to video in 86. And as I said, never got a VHS release in the UK or Ireland because nobody tried to bother submitting it. They did try and submit the sequel, and the BBFC insisted that it was cut, that the distributors cut certain sequences, and they were unwilling to do that. So part two never came out either. I do remember part four, I think, coming out under some alternate title called, was it Bugs? But we weren't really lavished with the Silent Night, Deadly Night series on these shores. So that explains why it was sort of the mid to late 90s before I finally got around to seeing it. And that's all the background I have, Justin. So over to you.
Okay, well, I was going to say, I'm hoping if I get time this week, I'm going to update the little retrospective I've got on Hysteria Lives for Silent Night, Deadly Night, because I picked up relatively, well, not that recently, but a while back, the TriStar Pictures press pack, which has got lots of quotes from the people in the film and talking about the film. TriStar tried to distance themselves from this because I think when they like many of the major studios, wanted a piece of the action, the slasher movie action, and they saw how well Friday 13th did for Paramount and all the other Happy Birthday to Me for Columbia and all of the other major studios had done mostly kind of negative pickups on independent pictures. But they had been just doing big budget movies, but they were eyeing a piece of kind of low budget action. So this was kind of greenlit in sort of 82, 83. I think it was shot. It's difficult to say. It was shot in early 83 or early 84. I haven't been able to find an answer on that. I think they were quite shocked by the reaction to the film, obviously when it came out. But when in the press pack, they acknowledged the humour from it, but also the horror. They say, though there's a certain black humour inherent in the concept, the paradox of a psychotic killer masquerading as Santa Claus, Silent Night, Deadly Night distinguishes itself from standard horror fare by examining the dark corners of the human psyche. So in some ways it sounds like they were taking themselves a little bit too seriously, but they also acknowledged that there was kind of horror. They acknowledged that there was humour within that. Just having there was a couple of interesting things actually about the originally Billy was meant to be the producer says there was a departure decision to be made about the character of Billy. We could have gone either way. The original idea was for Billy, after his experience, would grow up to being this sort of monstrous 18-year-old, a huge, gawky, unattractive, fleshy teenager. My choice was to make him a more sympathetic character. You actually have some mixed feelings about him in the end, and you know he wasn't all bad. You know he's done all these awful things, but you know why he's done them. So they could have gone the route of having a, you know, sort of like they do quite often, kind of, you know, sort of like an ugly, kind of killer, I kind of guess. But they decided to go with rather
Jensen Ackles.
Jensen Ackles. No, you know what I mean. But The Gilmer McCormack, who plays Sister Margaret, you know, she. I kept on wanting her to turn around to Mother Superior and say, "What is your cunt face?" Which you know that. What? You know that from Sound of Music when.
What is it you cunt face, Maria?
Yes. But she says in the notes, she says, I always wanted to do a horror film, though I ended up as a nun in this one. Sometime I'd like to play a psychopath. So I didn't really get that from her. She seemed to be very sympathetic, but obviously I don't know if she went on to play a killer in a slasher movie. I doubt she probably did. She was obviously aware of the controversy about this film before it came out. She said, I didn't have a problem with the script. I don't think the Catholic Church is the ogre I believed it was at one time. The stories about Catholicism are like the stories you hear about California when you live in New York. So I'm not quite sure what meant by that. But obviously, since the film came out, the Catholic Church has gone through all sorts of scandals, hasn't it? As we know. The Tony Nero, who plays Pamela, who I think is the teenager who gets stabbed to death or in after Billy tries to rescue her, she was a model, moved to Los Angeles in 1981. She went to audition for Silent Night, Deadly Night, and says the producers were impressed by the reading, though there was one small problem. It was her hair. It was curly. They thought I was a little wild for the main Midwestern girl I was supposed to play. I went home and got it as straight as I could to come back and got the part. So there's a top tip if you want to get
See, there's a joke movie. Right there, Justin. She straightened her hair, then she came back and got the part. That's a great joke. Better than anything Eric could have done.
Wait till you hear my joke of the week and then you'll be eating your words.
Okay, what else have we got? Well, Robert Brian Wilson, who played Billy at 18, he was like 22 years old at the time. He said, my girlfriend and I were coming out of a restaurant and a man walked up and asked if I was an actor. At that point, I'd just finished my second year in school. The idea of acting seemed, well, very attractive. When asked if it was difficult for him to portray a good kid gone murderously bad, the good-natured actor responded, it really wasn't hard. It was imaginary fun. I didn't get caught up in it, the psychotic aspect, although I know some people do. Even the producers were concerned about it, but honestly, it didn't bother me. But obviously, I think that it did eventually bother him, because I think he became very religious, didn't he? Is he? And he kind of disowned the film quite quickly after. I think he was embarrassed by the controversy when it sort of came out. There's an awful lot. I mean, that can prattle on for ages, because I wrote this kind of retrospective about the film, and obviously the controversy was stemmed by, well, there was lots of protests outside cinemas with people carrying placards saying things like "Deck the hall with holly, not bodies," and there were people literally chased out of town. So it all got very hysterical, and some people were saying the most bizarre things. But I've written a lot about that on the on Hysteria Live, so if you want to have a look at that. But one thing that did strike me, they sort of said one of the reasons why the film was pulled, because very rarely will major studios pull a movie because of negative publicity. I mean, if you look at Paramount and Friday 13th, they certainly didn't pull Friday 13th, even though it was getting awful reviews and they were getting a massive amount of flack from Siskel and Ebert and a lot of critics. But they knew it was making lots of money, so they didn't pull it. But the reason that they probably did pull it was, I think the director said that there was something to do with a share option or something coming up, and they were worried about the controversy. But also, I think TriStar was owned by or had shares or had something to do with the Coca-Cola company. And apparently there was a theory that, or it had been written about, that Coca-Cola, who obviously had very squeaky clean image, and every Christmas there's always kind of those kind of saccharine adverts with Santa Claus giving children a Coke, that they were worried. What?
You said Coke. I thought you said something else. Sorry.
Joseph, it's not that kind of show. But they were worried that it would conflict with the, you know, the sickly sweet Coca-Cola Santa image and having a psycho Santa. But of course, we said it was certainly not the first Santa slasher movie. You know, both To All a Good Night and Christmas Evil came out with very little sort of controversy a few years before. And All Through the House, the Amicus Santa Slayer, episode with Joan Collins from 1972. So it certainly wasn't a new concept, but you can never second guess what will kick off a moral panic, I kind of guess. But has anyone else got anything to say about
my brother, who's a little older than me? My dad took him to see this movie back in 84, I think, at Southgate. And I think they went because they were expecting a bunch of crazy ladies to pick it. But when they saw it, that they were the only ones that were actually in the theater. So they were kind of disappointed about that.
Well, that's good.
Because they wanted to see some protesters.
I wanted when Joseph and I went to watch it last year, I was hoping that for a publicity stunt, they'd hire like a few outraged mothers to pick at the theater.
That would have been great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes, that would have been awesome. I'd have wanted my picture taken with them.
Yeah. Well, one of my favorite stories when I was, have you ever seen John Waters' Polyester?
Yes.
Yeah, when he's got, they're protesting outside the porno theater.
Yeah.
And they're sort of down with this filth, kind of thing, and the guy's in his office just laughing and his feet up on a desk, and apparently exactly the same scene kind of half played out at least one theater in somewhere showing it, you know. the theater manager just sat in his office laughing, counting the money while the people outside were getting cold, waving placards. But it's a whole reverse publicity, isn't it? I mean, sometimes it backfires for certain films, and it did for this. I don't know then if there was any suggestion that it was manufactured. You know, it seems that it took off. There was genuine, but it wouldn't be the first time, because I think Snuff, do you remember that film, Roberta Finlay and Robert Finlay? Roberta Finlay and I don't know what his name was, Michael Finlay, I think.
Michael, yeah.
Yeah, who made Snuff, and then they hired people to do a fake outrage outside the outside the cinema, because it drummed up interest and people wanted to see the film. And you have similar things like with Nightmares in the Damaged Brain, when they did similar things. And also famously, I think it's Cannibal Holocaust, when they wrote to Mary Whitehouse, the people behind the film, or distributors to her, to say, have you seen this awful film? Because they knew that she would drum up loads of publicity by condemning it, but it backfired spectacularly by triggering the whole Video Nasty debacle. I think it's a fun film, and also when you watch it now, it's very difficult to understand how people could have got so worked up by it. Although I think it was the trigger, from what I remember, is they accidentally played the trailer or TV spot between Little House on the Prairie and some other kind of kid-friendly sort of program. And so lots of traumatized children, quite young children, saw, you know, a Santa with a dripping axe. And, So that apparently was the thing that kind of, and it was a mistake actually on the part of the TV station, but apparently that was, might have been the catalyst for the whole thing taking off in the way it did. But now you look back on it, it's difficult to really fathom how they got so worked up about it. But I think it's a fun film, and it's also got a really interesting background. So I'm glad we got to cover this one this time.
Did any of you see the remake, just Silent Night, I think it's called?
Yeah.
What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I liked it.
I did too. I liked it as well.
Mm. I can't really remember much about it. It's about 2 years ago now, so my memory doesn't stretch that far.
I thought it was fairly, fairly good for a remake.
Yeah, it was good for a remake, wasn't it? I mean, I haven't seen it. Yeah, I saw it when it came out, and I can't remember much about it apart from quite a lot of nudity, wasn't there? And
I trust you to remember that much.
But yeah. It's boobs, so
yeah.
But there was a Vogue, wasn't there, for that, with like My Bloody Valentine remake as well, when that woman was running around completely nude in that.
So it's a Vogue and for Friday the 13th had big boobies flapping in your face.
Talking of Friday the 13th, have you heard the latest rumours about what they're planning to do with the latest Friday the 13th?
Set in the 80s or something?
Yes. Yeah. Mm. So do you reckon that would be a good thing?
I don't know about that.
Yeah, the problem is that, they can get all the clothing that you want and all the set decorations, but if you're shooting on like anything other than old film, it's still going to look too polished. But we'll see.
Yeah. Cool. Okay. Well, is there anything else we want to say about Silent Night, Deadly Night, or shall we move on?
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. Yes. Would it be time now for Eric's Joke of the Week? Do we think?
I think it should be.
Okay.
Yeah.
my joke of the week. It's so, so fantastic.
So, what does Mrs. Claus do when it's her time of the month? She wears a Santa tree towel.
God.
You whore!
Eric's joke makes women cry.
It is making women cry.
I don't understand that joke.
It's like sanitary. It. Santa tree.
Santa tree.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. Joseph.
Joseph.
You of all people.
It's the accent. I'm sorry.
What accent? I have a neutral accent.
No. You actually do have a neutral accent for an Irish man.
Yes. Mid-Atlantic, they call it.
Yeah. You and your pubs.
Pubs.
That was actually quite a good Irish accent there.
Was it really?
Better than your Australian one last week.
Yeah. Hey, I've gotten kudos on that accent. Thank you very much.
Well, no, thank
from
you,
Justin.
Eric.
Justin said it was great.
Yeah, the best Australian accent I've ever heard.
No, no, I was talking about his attempt to do an Irish accent last week when it sounded Australian.
Oh, right. Oh. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bit of a disaster.
Yeah. Irish. Whatever-ish.
So. All right, darling. There, that's how Justin speaks.
Is it?
Yeah.
Sims.
Pardon? You calling the mothership?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Right, well, let's move on to feedback, and this is how you can get in contact with the show.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at @THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281, and you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Yes, indeed you can. So please get in contact. Let us know what your thoughts about this show and any other shows and anything you've got to say, and whether or not Eric's interview with me was better than my interview with him. I think we all know the answer to that.
Yeah, so, mine was. Mine had music.
Hey, Justin, congratulations on winning the quiz.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. No, it's great, wasn't it? Yeah.
My God, you're such a poor winner. You're so ungracious in winning.
Okay.
Actually, well, I think Joseph started that, Eric.
Yeah.
So, okay.
The episode's come crawling to an end, so I had to get Inga in one more time.
Yeah. Well, let's get on to our feedback. So, I've got one here. Has anyone else got one?
No.
Just me, but you go first.
Okay, right. Hey, guys. I certainly don't want to speak for all Americans, but as a male that was definitely old enough in the 1980s to be aware of a lot of music, I would have asked before hearing your podcast, who the fuck is Toya? Do you mean Michael Jackson's sister? I swear if you ask 100 Americans of my age who she is, 99 will say, who? I definitely knew Susie and the Banshees, though. She was huge in my high school, just behind The Cure for that crowd. Eric, you're still my favourite, though. Corrie in Colorado. So there you go.
I'd never heard of either one of them until I met you guys.
Oh.
There was an incident where somebody excitedly phoned me at work one day saying, oh my God, Toya's in today. And I got really excited, but it turned out to be La Toya Jackson.
Like a...
The popular one.
The one everyone knows.
Yeah. No. Sing me one La Toya Jackson song. I can't name one La Toya Jackson song.
No. Did she do Unmentionable Things with a Snake? Well, not Unmentionable Things, but I mean, as in dancing. Is that always?
Oh, right. I was wondering what. No, that was you.
No, that was not me, Eric. Although
Latoya
sometimes
Jackson sings "Bad Boys," doesn't she? Nasty Boys. Is that what it is?
That's Janis.
That's Janis Jackson.
Oh, I get them mixed up.
Oh, Nathan.
Are you trying to say they all look alike? That's racist.
No, I am not. How dare you? How dare you? No. I'm just saying that I did not realize that they were two separate people.
Well, Joseph, you'd heard of Susie before, hadn't you? Had you heard of Toya before?
I'd heard of both of them, actually.
Okay.
Ha! There you go, Justin.
Well, he's one out of the 100.
But Eric, Susie and the Banshees are a lot more popular over here than Toya is.
Yeah.
But Cyndi Lauper is more popular than both of them. So
unfortunately, yes, she is.
No, fortunately. I don't get into the singing battles that much, but I think we all know out of the three who's the best.
Yes, I think we do.
And so, it's neither.
Okay, well, Joseph, do you want to read out your one? And thank you, Corey, for getting back, even though saying Eric's did your favourite. I think that's...
He's got taste, it turns out.
Yes, well, this is also from Corey. He writes in again.
Okay.
And he says, hey, all, I had an idea for a top three that I don't think you've done. One thing that always makes me interested in a slasher film is the killer, is if the killer has an interesting look. I was thinking something like top three character designs for slashers. You could even do specific entries in a series and maybe do a bottom three as a separate list. For example, I love how Freddy looks in part two. I think it's a huge improvement over the first movie and is the iconic look to me for the whole series. However, he looks like a sad old man with a silly putty face in part five. And
I agree.
And do you think that's a pretty good idea? Character designs for villains? Have we done something like that before?
What, so talking about there, it's basically like being the fashion police.
Or just how they look, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I imagine Eric would be very good at the bottom three.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you just, you know, you're a recent quiz, you're probably, you know, quite more comfortable around the bottom.
And Justin, I just have to say congratulations.
I'll bottom you if you're not careful.
Eric. Okay. Sorry. Carry on.
Anyway, Corey goes on to say, and this is the part where he has an axe to grind with someone on the podcast. Now, I'd like to address the hate on the podcast towards sci-fi movies. I'm a movie lover. All movies, all in capital letters. I like action, drama, romance, sci-fi, animation, art house films, foreign films, you name it. I just tend to lean toward horror as a favorite, which is what led me to the Mondo Movie Podcast, which led me to your fantastic podcast. It seems to me you guys, Nathan really, are lumping all sci-fi into one category, shitty sci-fi. You're putting The Empire Strikes Back into the same category as something like Battlefield Earth. And I don't see a distinction between the two, myself. I'm sticking up for Nathan there. It'd be like lumping the Texas Chainsaw Massacre into the same category as Terror at Ten Killer or the Nailgun Massacre. And hey, don't speak ill of the Nailgun Massacre, okay?
Well, that's exactly what Nathan does. He lumps Texas Chainsaw Massacre in with Terror at Ten Killer. He loves them all.
Yeah.
I do.
Anyway, he says, even if you don't like the Star Wars movies, maybe something like Children of Men, District 9, Her, 12 Monkeys, and 12 Monkeys is excellent, by the way, The Thing or Alien would be more up your alley. Please stop lumping all sci-fi into one category and maybe try being a little more open-minded about other genres of film. They're not all bad. Sorry, had to rant. I got tired of hearing, oh, God, is that one of those there movies with them Klingon fellers with the light swords fighting in the Matrix against Iron Man and Donnie Darko? Thanks again for the podcast, Corey in Colorado.
Uncanny.
It was Herschel Tankersley.
That sounds exactly like me. I am a hillbilly, apparently.
But, Nathan, I do have one thing to say. Your accent has actually cleaned up since I've met you.
Oh, because when I first watch the movies I made on YouTube.
When I first met Nathan back in 2002 or 2003, his accent was very, very, very southern.
In what way? Can you
do it? Schooling him.
Yeah, I've been schooling him on Irish accents, but actually,
that's German. Nathan, wasn't that German? We will get you.
Actually, Nathan, someone actually has come to your defense. It's from Levi Olson. He posted on our Facebook page and says, "Dearest Nathan, you never bore me. Sincerely, the unknown murderer."
Well, see, I got some people that like me.
Yeah, so there you go.
But no, sci-fi movies, no, I'm not trying to lump them all into the same category. What I'm saying is the classic ones, the movies in sci-fi that are hailed as classics, like Star Wars, Star Trek.
That's not how you say the word classics, Nathan.
Clack, 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 classics.
That's better, thank you.
To me, they're on equal footing with something like Battlefield Earth. Like, I don't see the appeal, and that's not to insult people that like those movies. I just don't get it. You know, and I mean, I love many different genres of film, but I don't love every genre. I'm not big on Westerns. I don't really watch those. just because I know they don't appeal to me. So, you know, why waste my time? And, you know, the whole Star Wars thing, I mean, you know, people love it and, you know, people don't understand why I love some of the stuff I love. So, you know, it's just kind of the way it is for everybody.
See, no, I would not call Star Wars a sci-fi film. I'd call it a fantasy.
Eh?
Well, I mean, it's space, isn't it?
Yeah.
A space fantasy. It's not like grounded in real science or anything.
Well, a lot of sci-fi movies aren't grounded in real science.
Well, there's some out there that are. In pseudoscience.
That makes me wonder now what people's definition of sci-fi films are.
Well, Corey was talking about things like the Thing and Alien and things like that. But those
I like the Thing and Alien. Here's my thing. Sci-fi movies that kind of have a horror slant, I could kind of watch those, really. But it's just when we get into, like, you know, I guess sci-fi action type films, you know, I don't get it. It just doesn't appeal to me.
Well, fair enough. Different strokes and all that. So
now the world don't move
to the beat of just one drum.
Right.
All together now.
No.
You take the good, you take the bad, you put them together, and there you have my opening statement. Sit, Ubu, sit. Good dog.
Good dog.
Woof.
Right. Okay. Well, I think we've come to an end, as it were. We can have a few bloopers at the end of this show, I think.
Yes, we are.
As a couple of Christmas crackers for you.
Justin's done the vino. Glug, glug, glug.
I have not been drinking today. I did last night, but not today. But yes, well, next time, just to let you know, it's going to be my choice. And I thought we'd do something a little bit different. So we're going to be reviewing Nocturne by Susan the Banshees, their live album from...
No, I'm working that day.
We're going to be going south of the border to Mexico for the first time. And some of you may know and some of you may not know that in the 80s, Mexico had quite a few... Well, a couple of quite prolific slasher filmmakers. One of my favourites is Ruben Galindo Jr., who did one of his films, A Cemetery of Terror, which has somebody in a fantastic Michael Jackson diamond coat, kind of glittering coat thing. But the film I'm going to go for is the 1988 Nightmare on Elm Street slasher rip-off mashup extravaganza, which is Don't Panic. And I thought it make also make for quite an interesting talk about the Freddy rip-offs as well. But so next time we are going to Don't Panic. So if you do play along with the podcast, then you have plenty of time to watch that before we talk about it. So,
I just want everyone to know that I will perfect my Spanish accent for that episode.
Well, we can all look forward to that.
Is it going to be 3 weeks after this one?
Well, yeah.
Be four because we're recording a commentary for Don't Go in the Woods. So we're not recording again until the
11th.
The 11th? Yeah. So it'll be the 11th. So after this Christmas episode, we won't have another episode till the 11th.
But this is as with all good things, this is coming early, isn't it? Not all good things.
Because you're off to Turkey.
Eric, the episode after Justin's will be towards the end of the month, and that'll be our 4-year anniversary. So you need to pick a good one.
Oh, I have a good one in mind.
Okay.
I have a good one in mind.
Keep it to yourself at the moment because we like to keep the suspense. But we're going to play out, I think, with some of the closing music from Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Santa's watching. assumed was a. Whenever I watched Silent Night, Deadly Night, I assumed it was a traditional Christmas song, but it was written specifically for the movie.
Yeah.
But I did not know that.
Well, there you go.
It's really catchy. I like it.
Yeah.
So, hopefully, have a great Christmas from us all here, and a great New Year, and we'll be back with some Mexican madness. You guys, are you doing anything good for Christmas?
Today I'm going to go see A Christmas Story, the play.
Christmas Story, the play? What, like a nativity?
The musical.
Okay.
No, the Bob Clark film, A Christmas Story.
Oh,
right. Watch the musical.
Deck the hall with bar of hurry, fa ra 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 ra.
That's so racist, Eric.
That's from A Christmas Story.
Doesn't matter, it Eric. Is.
It is from A Christmas Story.
No, yes,
it is.
I wonder if it'll be in the play.
Mm. What are you I doing not, for Christmas, Eric?
They'll probably cut that. Yeah.
I'll be spending Christmas on my own.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
But then I'll be a few impaling. Days after.
I'll be visiting family then.
Right. Okay.
I'll be impaling naked women on deer antlers.
Right. Right. Fair enough. And I will be trying to, well, hopefully not get kidnapped in Turkey. So if you hear back from us, if you don't hear back from us on the 11th, then you know, send in the SAS to rescue Eric. Maybe. No, or me. Mm. But, well, thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed the episode, and let's play out with this and stick around for the bloopers. So, Merry Christmas, one and all.
Merry Christmas. Happy Christmas! Oh. Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Oh, oh, oh.
Is that a dog snoring in the background?
It is a dog snoring.
Naughty.
Jingle bells, jingle bells.
What kind of person does not eat eggs?
Well, a vegan.
You know I am.
I'm a chocolatarian. I'll only eat chocolate.
Oh, Eric.
Santa's watching. Santa's creeping. Now
sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? Oops, I'll start again. Sorry.
We need a blooper reel for this.
Yeah. Sleigh bells ring. Are you what?
Listening.
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 Goodness sake. Okay. Here we go again. I can't do it. No, I can't.
I knew he was going to get cracked up.
Oh, here we go. All right. I'm going to try. Okay. Sleigh bells ring. Are you listening? In the streets, blood is glistening. And it's you. Oh, God.
That's awesome.
Justin, this has to go to the end of the episode.
This has to be the ending.